Hey, listeners, I'm away this week. I'm at the annual meeting of UFA, the United Flamingo Fanciers Association. I can't believe it's been a year. It just flew by. So we're replaying one of our favorite episodes. It's on the history of cheerleading. Actually, it's a two-parter because what started out as an episode about pom-poms and perkiness turned into a much bigger story, a story about the battle to make cheerleading less white and the invention of a whole new style of cheer.
It has more chants. It's more inspired by gospel music, jazz music.
You have reached the Every Little Thing helpline. Give me a B. Give me an E. Give me an E. Give me a P.
Hey, Flora. It's Jessica. My husband and I were talking earlier today around 4:20. And we were wondering, how did cheerleading start? It is a factual emergency. Thanks. Bye.
Hello?
Hey, it's Flora from Every Little Thing.
Hey, Flora.
Jessica, it's funny, a lot of listeners call us with questions they thought up around 4:20. Looking for lasagna recipes, telling us our eclipse episode lines up perfectly with The Wizard of Oz.
It's a good time to clear your mind, and we were doing such, and I literally have no recollection of how the question was brought up, but I think I just, in true 420 fashion, spun around to my husband and said, hey, cheerleaders are weird.
What do you mean?
All of the cheers, all of the moves, the clothing, the social status, the pom-poms, you know, standing on top of each other, throwing people in the air, just the whole thing, if you look at it out of context, seems real strange.
Did you have any firsthand experience with this strangeness?
I was a cheerleader for a small period of my life as a kid. It was intense. If girls did their hair, it had to be the same exact way. Use the exact same products. Like if it was a certain scrunchie, it had to be the same color. It had to look the same. I mean, it was very conformed.
How about the cheers? You want to give me a cheer from your cheerleading days?
Okay, so we were the Eagles. And for some reason, someone decided that we should say, whoop, whoop, clom, clom, which runs together if you're a Southerner, but that is literally claw them. So we would just scream, whoop, whoop, clom, clom, and the entire crowd would do it. It was really strange.
Whoop, whoop, clom, clom.
It's like encouraging physical harm as well. You know, it's just the whole thing.
How did your cheerleading days come to an end?
You know, I wanted there to be more individualism, and there wasn't. But maybe there's something to that in the history of it. I don't know.
There is.
Really?
Mm-hmm. What do you want to know?
I do need to know where it was started. Who jumped up first and said, like, you know, hey, give me an A? And, like, what did the first person say? Like, did they say, here's your A? You know, like, how strange was that? I would like to know if it was always or started as female-led. I really need to know where pom-poms came from.
Jessica, I'm going to give you an A. I'm going to give you an N. I'm going to give you a swear. What's that spell?
And swear.
Okay, actually, I'm not going to give you an and swear, but Natalie Adams will.
Hi, Jessica.
Natalie is a professor at the University of Alabama and a former high school cheerleader.
Yes, I was a cheerleader back in the day when you had to have no talent whatsoever. I could do a cartwheel and a split.
What was the team?
The Wildcats, the mighty Winsboro Wildcats.
Do you remember any of the cheers?
Oh, yeah. So we always ended the pep rally and the football game with 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar, all for the Wildcats, stand up and holler.
Natalie has hollered on the field and in the field. She wrote the book on the history of cheerleading.
I co-authored with one of my very dear friends a book called Cheerleader, an American Icon. We had a lot of fun writing this book. We drank a lot of wine and practiced cheerleading jumps on the back porch.
I can see it.
Do you ever do that?
I don't. I mean, I drink a ton of wine.
So you asked, how did cheerleading begin?
Correct.
How do you imagine the first cheerleader?
I truly don't know why, but I picture a male, I don't know, like a group of guys like fighting over something, you know, and it just kind of like turned into this, oh, get him, and do this and do that. And it took off from there.
When I say you're right-ish, you say?
I'm right-ish.
The first cheerleaders were all male.
I'm so excited if that's right.
So I want to send you a picture of the people involved in the first documented moment in cheerleading history. We'll also put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
Dang. Okay, so we're talking like Abe Lincoln style. most of them have bow ties, and I really truly think one of them has a cane.
Abe Lincoln is actually not a bad reference because cheerleading seems to get going in 1869.
There's a lot of folklore kind of surrounding cheerleading and its history, but most people agree that the kind of first cheer was actually at a game between Rutgers and Princeton. A group of residents broke out into this cheer, which was rah, 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 sis, 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 boom, boom, boom.
Should we do that? Like, anytime there's, like, a good fact or something that you enjoy learning, should you do an
Yes. Okay.
The cheer is called the Princeton Locomotive, and they're still doing it to this day.
Tiger, 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 sis, 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 boom, 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 ah!
Oh, my God.
I feel like they could come up with something else.
I mean, they're, like, really smart, right?
I guess. In the early days, cheering wasn't that organized. It was just a bunch of dudes sissing on the sissa sidelines. There were cheers, but not cheerleaders. But that changed 30 years later.
The person who's usually given the cred as being the first cheerleader was a guy by the name of Johnny Campbell, and that was 1898 at the University of Minnesota. So in
the story goes that Johnny Campbell was at a game. He was so overcome with team spirit and, I don't know, Minnesota grain alcohol that he led the crowd in a cheer. This is how cheer got its leader. But he wouldn't be called that.
He would have been called like the Rooter King, the Yale leader, the Yale master, the Yale marshal.
But no man is a Yale island. Pretty soon, Yale marshals form Yale platoons.
Around 1905, 1910, you start seeing, you know, a squad, and it would be small, like four.
Are we letting women in yet?
No, still all men.
Look just probably like what you would imagine at an Ivy League school.
White dudes.
Clean cut, athletic.
Argyle sweaters, you know, maybe a pipe.
Exactly.
That really gets a crowd going, you know?
Well, if that doesn't get you going, maybe a cheer from the time will. It's sexy and math-based.
Well, there is one from Georgia Tech. When Georgia Tech was all male, they had a cheer that said, differential Y, differential X, to hell with differentials, we want sex.
I'm sorry, but who's going to say yes to that?
Now imagine them yelling, we want sex, while bouncing on a trampoline.
Trampoline.
That was their prop of choice.
One of the reasons why girls and young women weren't allowed is because that would have been very unseemly for a young woman to be bouncing off a trampoline, and that cheerleading would make girls too masculine.
Another concern about women. Did you just give me an
I did. Come on. Big point there.
Another concern was that women's voices were too shrill to command a crowd.
The frog-throated lassies. That's what they were called.
Oh, no.
I feel like frog-throated lassies is the vocal fry troll of the 1930s.
Yeah.
But we know frog-throated lassies get on that trampoline eventually.
What happens is during World War II, young men leave the college campuses and girls flock to cheerleading because there are positions there.
And when the war ended, women held on to those positions because this was one of the few athletic opportunities for women at the time.
They didn't want to leave, you know, very similar to women that got to work for the first time. They were like, I kind of like this. I don't want to leave.
By the 1950s, the cheerleading gender dynamic has flipped.
Cheerleading becomes very much feminized. High schools tended to be almost all girls.
And these girls are putting their own twist on cheerleading. They make their own uniforms, create their own cheers. It's all very artisanal and locally sourced.
All right, all right.
Let me give you an example of a cheer from the time.
Boom, chicka, boom, boom, chicka, boom, boom, chicka, boom, chicka, boom, 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 hee, 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 ha, 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 lobster, lobster, rah, rah, rah.
We're definitely in the Northeast here.
Okay, so just compare lobster, lobster, rah, rah, rah to the cheers we have today, which all sort of sound the same, like they could be coming from any school, anywhere.
T-A-K-E, take the ball away.
Success cheer, ready? Okay. S-U-C-C-E-S-S. That's the way we spell success.
I do notice that we spell a lot more now. And when you played that, I, you know, had one of those, like, PTSD shivers. And I was like, oh, yeah, we always did the ready, okay, and, like, one arm up in the air. It always started with that.
Jessica, there's a reason why you always started with that and why we all know the same spelling cheers. It traces back to the 1950s and one CEO.
Lawrence Herkimer was the father of cheerleading. There would not be cheerleading as we know it today had there not been Lawrence Herkimer.
Didn't expect it to be a man.
Jessica, have you heard of a Herky?
I have. Like, half of a split, one leg bent.
Yes, it is a famous cheerleading jump. If you imagine a cheerleader doing a jump, it would be this one.
I know about the Herky.
So the Herky was named after the so-called father of cheerleading. It was his signature move and his nickname.
Everybody called him Herky. Somebody called him Lawrence. You knew, if they called on the phone and asked for Lawrence, you knew that that's not somebody that really knew him. He'd probably somebody selling something.
That's Herky's sister-in-law, Barbara Hazelwood.
He was married to my sister, Dorothy.
When did you meet him?
Oh, when I was a baby in the crib. He was around, and I was a flower girl in their wedding when I was five.
Jessica, what do you want to know about Herky?
Well, I would like to put a face to the name.
All right, let me send you a picture.
Okay, so... This guy has a lot of pep, for sure.
Yeah, that's verified.
Oh, yes. That was Perky Herky. Sometimes people would laugh and call him Perky Herky.
That could not be any better.
I know.
He's in, like, white kids, white socks, white pants, white handkerchief, like, around his neck, tight polo shirt. I just noticed all the women screaming below him.
Yes, he's, like, mid-Herky jump above five women, five white women. All dressed in white.
All with, like, the same haircut. Yes, yeah.
They look like they're supposed to be doing mock horror, but they're doing real horror instead.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So that was Herky in his heyday, but here's how he got his start. Herky was a cheerleader in high school and college. He loved it so much that after graduation, he kept going to cheerlead at football games. And at one game, he got so excited he did backflips all the way down the field. Someone took a picture, it ended up in a big national magazine, and that's when his phone started to ring.
Well, he received a phone call from a Dr. Hackney down in Huntsville, Texas, at Sam Houston State Teachers College. And to get a phone call back in those days, well, it was pretty, you know, it was pretty serious. If somebody called you on long distance, wow, that was a big deal. So he called Herky to see if he would go down and train some of his cheerleaders.
He was called in to bring some pep to this cheerleading squad. And after he did this training, the phone rang again and again and again.
And then it just snowballed.
All from the backflips.
So Herky and his wife, Dorothy, saw a business opportunity and took it.
they really were a team. They were almost like George Burns and Gracie Allen. I mean, they were, you don't, you probably don't even know who they were.
Oh, George, for me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're the sweetest husband in this whole house.
I can see it.
Herky could just light up a room, and Dorothy could too.
Herky and Dorothy get to work. They start with the cheer clinics and then expand the business into merchandise.
We sold the cheerleader uniforms, the sweaters, and your shoes, the cheerleader shoes, necklaces. It used to be really popular to wear a little megaphone necklace around your neck to show that you're a cheerleader.
But the pièce de résistance of their merchandise business was essentially a crumpled piece of paper that Herky patented.
The pom-pom.
Give me a Y, give me an E, give me an S.
Yes.
It's just a natural thing when you're jumping up and down, yelling and screaming for your team. You want something to shake.
Herky created and patented the pom-pom.
Yes.
But technically, we're pronouncing it wrong. There's a whole, possibly apocryphal, story.
He was doing a cheerleader clinic in Hawaii. And so he said to the girls, he said, okay, I want all you pom-pom girls to come over here, the P-O-M-P-O-M. And they all started kind of snickering and giggling. Well, he found out that in Hawaiian, that was not a very nice girl. A pom-pom girl was not a very nice girl.
What do you mean not a very nice girl?
Well, it was like a lady of ill repute was a pom-pom girl.
No.
And I guess a stripper or something, I don't know, something. So they changed the name of it to Pom Pon.
With an N?
With an N.
P-O-M-P-O-N.
I've been calling those crepe paper shakers a girl of ill repute for the last, I don't know, 30 years of my life.
That didn't stick.
But it is the official patented name. It's kind of amazing that they're still around. They're kind of a low-tech invention.
Yes. Yes, and they cost quite a bit. I remember my parents not being sure if they could afford that attachment to my gear. They were just like, oh, you got to have these. You can't borrow with another girl, you know?
So Herky had the cheerleading world in the pom-pom of his hand. By the peak of the business, they were grossing millions a year and selling the majority of cheerleading uniforms and equipment bought in the U.S. But the biggest part of his business were cheerleading camps.
Herky's cheerleading camps were offered throughout the country.
At these camps, cheerleaders learned to give me an A, do a Herky jump, hold their arms in a tight, militaristic style. Through these camps, cheerleading got standardized.
That makes sense.
Our expert Natalie went to one of Herky's camps when she was a teenager. She had a good time.
Oh, absolutely, because I come from a very small town, and we went by ourselves, and we were able to do things like smoke in the dorm room and things like that. So, oh, absolutely. We look forward to it.
But the camps didn't just teach teen smokers how to do basket tosses and pony mounts. They also taught teen smokers teen spirit.
So one of the most coveted things that you can, well, it is the most coveted thing you can bring home from cheerleading camp is called the spirit stick.
This was another Herky invention.
He was at a cheerleading camp in Redlands University in California, and there was a cheerleading squad that they weren't that good in terms of just cheer execution, but they were real enthusiastic. And so he went and broke off a twig off of a tree and handed it to them and said, here's your spirit stick. You're the most spirited squad at this camp. And it then started becoming a tradition. Only a few teams got to bring it home. My team never brought it home.
You're too busy smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, we were smoking cigarettes and drinking.
But it wasn't all fun and drinking games. There were also daily lectures at the camp to pump up the peppers. And this part is cray. Jessica, can you give me a Z?
Z.
This part is crazy.
One of the things that would happen at cheerleading camps is you were very much made to understand that you were at the top of the social hierarchy at your high school if you were a cheerleader. So, like, we had a cheer that everybody would do, and it was called C-H-E-E-R-L-E-A-D-E-R-S. Oh, yes. And we are the best. And we would just all sing this about ourselves. know.
I need to start my morning that way.
It's very empowering. But yeah, so the idea that you were the bomb at your high school.
That is crazy. You're right. Totally cray. You know, it's not like these girls just got this idea. Someone told them it was okay, and it was passed through generations. That's crazy.
There's this great quote from Herky telling some people at a camp, when you become a cheerleader, you become an instant. Not an instant cup of coffee, an instant success. You become instantly popular, instantly imitated, an instant trendsetter. What you do, what you wear, how you act, what you are, everything about you will be carefully studied and carefully copied by all the other girls.
It's fascinating because, I mean, it's like Herky helped create this idea that mm-hmm. has oppressed a lot of high school students if you are not at the top of the food chain.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Being a cheerleader is being a lot of things, and they're all good things. Maybe that's why, at one time or another, we all want to be cheerleaders.
Boys, I love to scare. I'm on it. I'm hot. I'm everything you're not. I'm pretty. I'm cool. I dominate the school. Who am I?
It's crazy that it lasted this long.
And your insight was spot on. There is a strange uniformity to cheerleading. And that was by design, by Lawrence Herkimer's design.
It was him. Herky Jerky.
Herky Jerky. I hope we've made some space for you to contemplate other questions during your next 420 session. Why Garfield is weird.
Right? He eats meatloaf.
It's Why? Lasagna.
I think that's probably Oh, it's lasagna. Still strange, though, Flora. I mean, I think that would be really detrimental to a cat.
All right. Will you give me a B-Y-E?
Give me a B.
B.
Give me a Y.
Why?
You were late. Give me an E.
Bye. Okay, we're saying goodbye to Jessica, but stick with us because after a short halftime break, we will be back with a special part two to our cheerleading story. We'll hear about the fallout of Herky's legacy, how cheerleading became a battleground for desegregation, and how Black cheerleaders redefined the sport. Lawrence Herkimer, a.k.a. Herky, standardized cheers, routines, and marketed a cookie-cutter cheerleader identity through his cheer camps. And along with the pyramid building and SUCCESS cheers, Herky taught cheerleaders they're better than everyone else, that they represent ideal femininity, the all-American girl next door. By 1965, 500,000 girls had attended his camps where that message was drilled into them, and the vast majority of those campers were white. And megaphoning this message to this crowd had disastrous consequences. Here's cheerleading historian Natalie Adams.
The selection of cheerleading squads would end up becoming one of the most volatile school desegregation issues around the South.
Okay, listeners, the next chapter of cheerleading history is raw, not rah-rah-rah. That's what we're going to hear about today, why cheerleading squads were one of America's most volatile desegregation battlegrounds.
You had other sports squads, basketball, football, that there wasn't much of an issue. I'm not saying there were none, but we saw different issues when it came to integrating those cheerleading squads.
That's cheerleading expert Sherita Richardson. She studied cheerleading history during her PhD, and she's the founder of the group Black Girls Cheer. She was also a cheerleader herself, and she told us what she loves about the sport.
To me, cheerleading is where athleticism meets pageantry. So I loved it. It was like you could be athletic, but you still get to dress up and put on the makeup, and they get to do their hair. So it was like a nice merge.
Sherita, that's like my nightmare.
What's that?
The two things I want to be part of least, pageantry and athleticism.
You know, oh, those, oh my gosh, I think those are two great things to be.
if you have the ability, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, they get to show their strength, you know, and just how fierce they are, but at the same time, they get to embrace their womanhood and femininity. You know, it's like it's all there.
Athleticism, strength, pageantry, femininity, all that's there. But it hasn't always been there for everyone because of white supremacy. That's there too.
We'll talk about one particular case, which is in Burlington, North Carolina, in May of 1969. The school was preparing tryouts for the cheerleading squad.
A couple African-American students tried out.
And there was one girl in particular from the stories that I've read and the stories I've been told that they just knew she was going to make the squad, and she didn't. The students decided they were going to take a stand. So they asked for a meeting with the school officials. That didn't happen. They decided that they were going to march down to the county office, and it erupted into a riot. And so the National Guard was called into Burlington, and the city was put on a curfew. So one of the nights, on the evening of that night, Leon Mebben,
a local junior high school student,
went out, and somehow he got caught in a crossfire between the Burlington Police Department and the National Guard, and he was killed at 15 years old. So what started as a cheerleading tryout ended in a murder of a 15-year-old boy. Now, there were situations like this all across the country where there were, you know, riots or different types of things that were happening in schools because of the lack of representation on those squads.
Why was the integration of cheerleading squads so contentious? Sherita says it has to do with the perception of who a cheerleader is supposed to be and what she's supposed to look like.
I think the main issue was just an issue of imagery. Who is the American girl? Who is the cheerleader? And what does the American girl look like? We see the American girl, white girl, blonde hair, prim, proper, put together, very deep bow, tied, spirit fingers flickering, big smile on her face. We see that as a cheerleader. She doesn't look like an Afro at that time. If you think about the 60s and 70s, this is during the era of Angela Davis and the Black Panthers when women, Black women were wearing big Afros. That doesn't look like the American girl who is a cheerleader that's well-polished and put together.
And that well-polished American girl cheerleader image, the spirit fingers, flickering, big smile, white girl, traces back, at least in part, to Lawrence Herkimer.
He definitely had a role and a part in it, but during that time period, he was only echoing the thoughts of just society as a whole.
He didn't invent this problem, but perpetuated it.
Yes, in his area.
In his realm of influence, which was substantial.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do anything to help.
No. You know, we just... Like I said, I'm mindful of the times, you know, I'm mindful of the times and that is where society was as a whole.
While Herkimer continued to spread his brand of pep through the 1970s, cheerleading was changing. A whole new style of cheering was springing up on HBCU campuses. Sherita remembers the first time she saw it.
My father and my mother both graduated from historically Black colleges. My dad loved to go to homecoming. And every time we would go to homecoming, I never watched the games. I always wanted to sit close to the cheerleaders. And I just loved watching the cheerleaders who, what they were doing is what we call the stomp and shake.
Stomp and shake. This style, unlike Herky's, is not about perkiness and ponytails.
It's sassy. The stomp and shake cheerleaders, they're stomping, they're making different rhythms or beats with their feet and their hands. They're not showing the spirit or the smiles that your traditional cheerleaders are showing. Their voices can be a little deeper. So it's very different from traditional cheer.
Give me an example of a traditional cheer and then an example of what changed.
Okay, so an example of a traditional cheer may just be like, go, fight, win, you know.
You're not really selling it.
I'm not selling it. Okay. You know, it could be D, 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 defense, D, 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 defense. That would be more of your traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But in a stomp and shake, you would be like, shoot that ball. Hey, hey, shoot that ball. Oh, yeah, shoot that ball. Hey, hey, shoot that ball. It's more, it has a little more rhythm. It has more chants. It's more inspired by gospel music, jazz music.
Stomp and shake didn't spread like the Herky style did. It didn't have a businessman with a profit motive to help it along. Instead, it took root school by school, cheer squad by cheer squad. But it wasn't always welcomed with open arms. Like when Sherita tried to bring it to her high school in the 90s.
So I went to a very rural high school in a very small town in North Carolina. It was mostly an all-black school, all-black high school. I think there were less than 100 individuals who graduated with me. We had a good sports team, though, so that's where I was cheering.
And initially, Sherita was cheering Herky style. Stomp and Shake had been around for about 20 years, but it hadn't made it to her town.
We were doing a lot of the traditional cheerleading, the more military-inspired cheers. I remember even at cheerleading tryouts, it was all about precision and being sharp.
As fun as militaristic precision sounds, Sherita was more interested in stomping and shaking. At those HBCU games with her parents, she had been taking notes on the cheerleaders' chants, their routines, trying to commit them to memory.
I would just watch them, and I would try to imitate them when I got back to school. So I would try to teach the cheerleading squad, because I ended up being the captain, the stomp and shake style cheerleading. And at that time, in our area, I'm not going to say it wasn't well-received. It was just new.
But was it not well received?
There were some in the community who loved it, but some of the administrators and our teachers and our coaches were like, okay, we can't go but so far. Be careful.
Wait, be careful how?
Don't move too much. Don't shake too much. People are going to think you're fast. You know, that was the term at the time.
Fast.
But it was big fast because you're shaking. You're shaking your hips. And I do remember... You know, it's funny because you're bringing this stuff back to my recollection. I remember one of the first times that we did a stomp and shake style cheer, the crowd kind of looked at us like, you know, like, what are they doing?
Like the crowd raised an eyebrow?
Yeah, they would raise an eyebrow. It definitely wasn't a look of pleasure at all.
Sherita says stomp and shake raised an eyebrow and produced definitely not the look of pleasure because it challenged the norm.
So I think that was kind of the sentiment that this isn't cheerleading. This doesn't look like what we've traditionally seen. And even now, even on our page sometimes, if we post athletes doing stomp and shake cheerleading, people will say, that's not cheerleading. That's not cheerleading.
People within the African-American community or white people were like, this is not cheerleading.
I think a little bit of both, but I will say more of mainstream America, more whites say that than blacks. But I've heard it from both places, so it's not uncommon to kind of hear those same sentiments across different races. But then you'll get a lot of girls defending it, saying it is cheerleading, or who defines what cheerleading is, or who is to say that it's not.
This conversation is still happening today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you got the professional sports cheerleading that people say, well, that's not cheerleading, that's dance. Then you move over to your all-star cheerleading. Well, that's not cheerleading, that's tumbling and stunning. Oh, you go over here to the stomp and shake. That's not cheerleading, that's stomp and shake. That's stepping. And so there's always that conversation happening.
And that conversation, how do you define a cheerleader, goes back to Lawrence Herkimer and that cheerleading image he created, an image that Sherita is working to redefine 60 years later. Where do you think we are today in terms of breaking that image of the blonde, pigtailed, big-smiled white girl as cheerleader?
So, you know, some days I think we're making progress. Some days I have hope. There's been, you know, the last couple years when I look at magazines and I'm starting to see more girls of color, more diversity inside Cheerleading Magazine. One of the larger cheerleading publications actually has had cover girls who have been all Black. All Black girls on the front of the cover, Angel Rice, Nadira Knox recently graced the cover of the magazine. It was like, woo, yes, we get a magazine with a Black girl on the front. Finally, little girls get to pick up magazines and books and see girls that look like them. I always say you cannot be what you do not see. And they need those images and so that we can change it. And so I'm very hopeful. I think, wow, we're moving. Okay, yes. And then I feel like we go right back sometimes to the familiar.
Sherita, what do you think it did for you being a cheerleader?
I think confidence, a lot of leadership skills, and it gives you a little bit of sass. too.
If you have a burning question you can't get to the bottom of, give us a call. 833-RING-ELT. 833-RING-ELT. And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at ELT Show.
This episode of Every Little Thing was produced by Aaron Reese, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, and edited by Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. We had help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron, mixed by Dara Hirsch, scored by Dara Hirsch and Bobby Lord. Goodbye.